I would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is primarily created, the Gadigal of the Eora Nation. I pay my respects to elders both past and present, and extend that respect to all First Nations people listening today. My name's Emily McKnight, and this is An Actor Survives, a podcast that digs deep into Australia's most creative minds to uncover the tools you need to survive a career as an actor. Quick side note, this episode was recorded on Zoom, so please forgive the slightly dodgy sound quality. So welcome, Deb, to An Actor Survives.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
And first of all, can you please tell us how long have you been an actor and when was the first moment you felt confident to call yourself an actor?
I graduated from acting school in 2015. How long have I wanted to be an actor? I think I was about 10 years old and I watched Peter Pan with Jeremy Sumpter, the live action, totally had the biggest crush on him. And I wanted to be a fairy and I wanted to be a mermaid, a pirate, like all those things that were in the movie. And it was an obsession. I would dream about it, journal about it, everything. And then I hired the DVD from like Blockbusters and I watched the special features. And that was the first time I learned about green screens and harnesses and CGI. And I thought, wow, like people can make fantasy real through this. And I wanted to make other people feel how I felt watching Peter Pan. So that's when I decided to be an actor. And I guess the first time I called myself an actor wasn't until 2018 when I toured with Bell Shakespeare with the Players, and that was my first long 6-month gig tour around Australia, and my income was fully based coming from acting. So that's when I felt like, oh, I can do this, and this, like, I can pay my rent with my acting money. I never thought that was possible. So that's when I started calling myself an actor, and it took a while to get used to because I felt a bit I felt almost stuck up, like I'm an actor, but I think, I don't know where I even got that idea from, but now it's like, I don't love telling people I'm an actor because they assume certain things, or they're like, have you been on Home and Away? What have you been in that I've seen you in? It's like, how often do you go to the theater? How often do you pay attention to commercials? Because that's my two main income streams. 2018 was when I was like, yeah, I'm an actor.
Yeah, that is one of those things that keeps coming up, that people do have that kind of reaction, like other people have that reaction to actors, but also we ourselves feel like it's a weird stuck-up thing to say. Yeah. I even had it in a class that I was in and people were going around and talking about what they were doing and I was like, oh, do I say I'm an actor? Like it sounds so... that people can do.
Exactly. Yeah, like... oh, man. And I met a girl... she was another Korean girl. I met her at my church and I was like, what do you do for work? And she's like, I'm an artist. And I was like, oh, tell me about that. Like, what kind of artist? And she's like, I draw for Sydney Museum. And I was like, what do you draw? And she's like, I draw the artworks. So she replicates through pen and pencil. She sketches the artworks at Sydney Museum. And I had such a hard time getting my head around it. Like, I didn't know that was a job. And then I was like, do you love it? Because that sounds like the coolest job ever. And she's like, no, like I'm over it because it's not challenging enough. Because she's such a good drawer. She doesn't find it challenging anymore. It's just like, it was just so interesting. Like her job to me was so out of the ordinary, unfamiliar. And that's probably how people feel when we say we're actors, because they're unfamiliar. And we feel like we have to explain it so they understand. It's very interesting.
Yeah. Although I reckon that's an actor trait though, because when I meet someone that has a job that I don't know about, I often will go, whoa, that's so cool. And they're like, oh, I just sit at a desk 9 to 5. And I go, yeah, but you're typing about this or whatever. Like I get really excited. Maybe it's an actor thing because you're going like, I could play that one day.
Maybe.
I met someone at a party a few years ago that cleans windows, but like high-rise windows.
So he's harnesses?
On harnesses. And he's like, oh, yeah, I'm a rock climber, but like my day job is like cleaning high-rise windows in a harness. Oh, and I was like, what?
I'm so jealous.
How do you, wow, I can't believe that's your job.
Yeah, and just, oh, like, he wouldn't have gone to rock climbing school or anything. He just can't, like, did it start off as a hobby and then...
Speaking of harnesses and things, did you kind of follow that dream that you had from...
Yes, so, Peter Pan, in 2019, was it? Oh, gosh, I don't even remember. Oh, it was end of 2018, after I finished the Bell Shakespeare's tour, I booked a gig... a principal role in a Australian independent feature film, and the theme was children / family fantasy adventure, and so it was like, yeah, it was like Peter Pan, it was like my childhood coming, my wishes coming true. And I wasn't in a harness, but I did get to act in front of a green screen, which was really cool. And so after I shot that movie, I just kind of looked at my life and I was like, well, I've kind of achieved everything I wanted to in my career, because that was my only thing. So I'm like, what do I do now? I can do anything. And it's just like a bonus on top of that, because I've already ticked that box. So I did get to live out my fantasy dream, which is really cool.
That is cool.
Oh, it's fun.
Did you move to Sydney from Cairns? Is that what you said?
Yeah. So I moved from Sydney to Cairns in 2013. I studied for 3 years and... yeah, graduated in 2015. And I don't remember too much of what I learned in acting school, because I think I was 18, and moving from a small town, Cairns, far north Queensland, to the big smoke, inverted commas, to Sydney, I was so overwhelmed by just city living, everything, the amount of people, the diversity, the energy and the tempo of Sydney. And I got so caught up in... I got so distracted in being out of home for the first time, and I did get involved with some sketchy people, some toxic relationships, you know, your late teens, early 20s, all that BS. So I don't actually remember too much of what I learned in acting school. I think I almost kicked out because I wasn't handing my assessments in on time, so I had to like get everything extended. But I do remember a few little things, little nuggets, but I learn more on the job. So when I book a job, that is where you learn a lot, because it's an actual set. It's not replicating a set or simulating something in case you, like in acting school, with mock showreels and stuff, it's supposed to teach you to be in front of the camera and learn the lingo and what to expect. But when you're actually in front of the camera, you learn it on the go and you absorb a lot more, because it's real, it's happening. You have to pay attention.
Yeah. And have you done a mixture of theater and film?
I've done like The Legend of the Five was the Australian independent film where I had a principal, one of the lead roles in, but then I did another independent Aussie film, and I had a small role on Shang-Chi, The Legend of the Ten Rings, and I did the gig, booked the job, did it. I was, my character, she was a friend of the two leads, Simu and Awkwafina. So we had a bar scene in Sydney, and then that night we shot, the day after we went into lockdown. And so the whole production was in lockdown. Yeah, it was wild. It was in March 2020, was it? 2021?
Yeah, 2020 was when it all started.
Yeah. And so they locked down, and then all the COVID stuff happened, and then they eventually finished shooting, wrapped, went back to LA, I think, and then I was told by my agents that they had this was maybe 8 months later, I was waiting for the movie to come out so I could like get that scene and put on my showreel, and my agents called me and they were like, oh, I'm so sorry, but they had technical difficulties during your scene when they were shooting that they had to reshoot. And usually they would have flown you out to reshoot, but because of lockdown and the border closures, they couldn't fly you out.
Oh,
so they
no.
had to recast. Yeah. So I was in it, and my left shoulder is in the trailer, but I'm not in the final.
Oh, and you can't really put that in your show reel.
No.
A little arrow saying, that's my shoulder.
I heard someone did that once. I was like, whoa, that's brave. And I spoke to my good friend about it, and she said it's a blessing in disguise, because Marvel, their fan base is so big that if you get a small role, they'll most likely never cast you in anything bigger, just because the fans will like pick you out and be like, that's that girl from the bar.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Jeez.
I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, so that's fine. A huge experience.
Oh, yeah. Because Destin, yeah, he was the director, and I like got to work with him, and it was, there was like over 200 extras on set. Like, it was huge. It felt like I was stepping into a behind the scenes and like stuff that I would watch on DVD players.
And is that like, can you put that on your CV? Like, can...
Oh, that's interesting. I thought I couldn't, but then I went on my IMDb and I noticed that a lot of people are listed as uncredited, which just means that like you're not in the credits, but you were there on set and you did the job. So technically we can. And I was kind of umming and ahhing whether or not I should. I ended up doing it. Maybe I'll take it off one day, but because I'm still like, I think maybe that IMDb might connect you to other people on IMDb. So I just like put it on. Yeah. I have no idea. We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I used to get really insecure when you had to write my CV. I remember when I had only stuff like high school productions on there for a while. And then there came a day when I was like, I should probably take them off.
Yeah.
Yeah. And writing bios, like what was, I did a indie theater work at the Depot. I did Cymbeline back in, I think, 2015 or 2016. Wow. And we have to write a bio for the, what are they called?
Program.
The program. See, I know nothing for the program. And I had nothing to write and I was like, crap, what do I say? And I'm sure we've all been there. It's like, I don't know what to write about myself.
Yeah, it is. It's a strange thing, but I guess that comes down to that whole thing of like, that they often talk about treating yourself like a business and, you know, you have to do your own marketing and all of that.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard someone be like, you're an actor when you book a job, but if when you're not working, you're a businesswoman. And I was like, okay, I don't know anything about business. So whatever.
Yeah. Cause it is that when you're not working bit is the challenging bit. How do you cope with that? Have you got other day jobs and all that kind of stuff?
Well, it's always tricky when people ask you what you do. Also, why do we ask people what they do so much? Like in society, I feel like that's one of like the first few questions. Like, hey, what's your name? Like, what do you do? Why? Like, I don't know. Maybe we find a lot of identity in our work, which probably can be very toxic, but it's hard saying you're an actor when you're not working because people are always like, what are you in? Mm. And then like, what's your response? Like, oh, nothing. I don't know when this mindset came, but I just started not caring so much. And it's like, you know, I used to always check my inbox for replies about callbacks and or everything or every audition I did. But it's weird. I have really bad memory. So I will do an audition and then I will forget almost straight away. And then my partner will ask me, he's like, oh, have you heard back from so-and-so? And it takes me a minute. And I've had to tell him to stop reminding me because it also, like, I don't want to think about it. And I also feel real shit for not remembering. So I'm like, stop. And I don't tell my parents anything anymore either. Because yeah, they get really excited for like the smallest jobs. And I'm like, oh, I don't know how to process that excitement because it's not that big a deal. Like a commercial is not that big a deal for me. It's good money, but it's not like career changing. So I don't have another job, which I stopped work. I used to do some nannying here and there. So I was looking after this one lady. She was a millionaire and her business was hair products. And she had two kids who were quite old. They were 12 and 9, so they're not, or 8. And I just went over her house, helped them with homework, cooked them dinner. And I only had one dog at the time. I could take my dog to work with me. So I thought that I was living the dream. Like I literally wanted to do that for the rest of my life. And then sometimes I'd do her laundry and I just found it so therapeutic. I love housework. So I find housework very good for my mental health. So I was honestly living it up, getting paid hourly to take my dog to work. So that was a good gig. But then what did I book? See, I can't even remember. I booked something and I had to leave her. And now her kids are older and they don't need me to like help them with homework and stuff. So it's like, whatever. So now I'm currently not working another job besides auditioning and acting. I have a job lined up for, I don't know, in a couple of weeks doing a web series for SBS. And
Cool.
yeah, I love a commercial. I just changed agencies as well. So it's been a bit hectic with paperwork
Ah.
and just getting used to the dynamic of a new agent because there are more people in the office than my last place, and I'm getting used to like who to contact for what, and if like do I email, text, or phone about this? Like it, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so it's taken a while. I just finished White Pearl. Probably I can't say just anymore because it's been maybe 6 weeks, but. After I finish a job, I always let myself give myself permission to just chill and,
Yeah.
like I budget. I'm pretty good with money. Like I budget very well. So if I look at my account, I'm like, oh, cool. I can like chill for X amount of months, without being like really in trouble. Then I'll just let myself do that because I know that something will come. And if it doesn't, it's not the end of the world. Like I can always do something else. And sometimes, especially during COVID, I'm sure a lot of actors went through this where they wanted to quit or have quit, thought about other careers that are more quote unquote stable. And I did think about it. I think I'd want to be a dog trainer. I almost started my own raw dog food business. Like I am dog
Wow.
obsessed. If you wanted to change this interview and talk about dogs, this would go for like 10 hours. I love dogs. I love dog nutrition and health. And oh my goodness, when I was changing agents, the main reason why I did was because I felt like I was losing my momentum and my passion for acting. And so
Oh.
I was gonna just leave my agents and leave acting altogether and start a dog food business. And then the more I thought about it, I was like, well, like I thought about everything I loved about acting and I still really do love it. And I know that because of COVID, a lot of artists went through this. So I thought maybe I need to change an agent and get that fresh start and yeah, just see what happens. Because I also want to know how different agencies work. Like I was with my previous one for 7 years and I felt like
Right.
that was all I knew. So I was very comfortable and I needed to get out of my comfort zone to see what else is out there. So we'll see what
Yeah.
happens.
'Cause you're right about that feeling of questioning and I think you're right. I think a lot of actors have been through it and or already have quit and
Yeah. And acting, like, I guess quitting, you could always put it down and pick it back up later because
very true.
it's like it's not the end of the world. And there are so many jobs out there. Like, I don't know. I've never had a full-time job in my life. And I don't know what it's like to sit down at a desk 9 to 5. I was a receptionist part-time for a little bit and I loved it. I thought having a routine was awesome. And going out for a morning coffee and then like catching public transport and doing all that to, like in peak hour. And that was like I felt like I was playing a character.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, you can, that's something that you can be like, oh, I'm playing this role now.
Yeah. So I mean, I went through periods. I think after Sport for Jove, I can't remember, but I do remember multiple periods in my career that's only been for like 5 years, not long, 4 years, where I wasn't auditioning and I was like, and I walk out of auditions beating myself up sometimes, but you need that community, like you said, around you to really check in on you and get your head straight when you're starting to get too consumed with your own thoughts and reevaluate. You're like, it's not the end of the world. That was an one audition out of how many casting directors out there? There are so many, and they don't remember.
No, yeah. I know. There's not some kind of blacklist somewhere where they go, oh, she was terrible. I mean, I hope there's not.
It's good to have other passions. Like unfortunately, my passion with dogs at the moment isn't like a income revenue for me. It would be great if it was, but it's not. Every job, every life experience is another tool to put towards a character and to like apply on an acting job. And so like you're getting all this life experience working with different people of different ages and backgrounds. And like it makes the time in between auditions go faster. I think it's very dangerous for an actor to not have anything else to do. Wow, as I'm saying this, I'm realizing I'm that person. But like, I don't do anything besides walk and feed my dogs. But I love it. So yeah. I've given myself permission to completely be a dog mum. But like, yeah, like make the time go fast in between. Don't sit around waiting for a job to come your way. Like do what makes you happy, because you need to rely on more than, it's like putting all your eggs in one basket with a friend. You can't expect that one friend to fulfill every aspect of your life. You need a community. So I think variety is awesome.
Yeah, that's really true. So on that kind of idea of making the time in between go faster, have you gone down the path of making your own work?
So this is where I have huge imposter syndrome. So I have a good friend who knows a lot about the industry, and she is like, she knows every like news article that the union will post and all the latest projects. I don't know how, like, is there a website where everything is just listed? Because I don't know how she knows this, but she just knows this. She knows her shit. And I, sitting next to her, feel like I am in the wrong industry, because I can't name every single actor in this movie XYZ. And I don't know even a lot of famous people's faces or names if you showed me their face. Because
would you know what? I'm the same. I
literally, oh, really?
I went to trivia last week and I'm terrible at trivia. And then it was like, who's this actor in this movie? And name this face. And I was like, I don't know. And then everyone is like, oh, yeah, obvious. And I'm like, oh, I don't.
Oh, my gosh.
Am I bad that I don't know?
Oh my gosh, Emily, I just kind of assumed you would, because you're running a podcast on like Actor Vibes, but it's so refreshing to know that like you don't know either, because I don't meet many actors who don't know, because I think we feel like we have to be on top of it all the time to like be relevant in the industry or something. Okay, so I don't know how many people are going to listen to this and judge me hard, but whatever. I had dinner with Andrew Garfield when he was shooting Hacksaw Ridge. Do you know who he is?
Yeah, I know the name, yeah.
Apparently he's Spider-Man. I didn't know at the time.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't have told you that. See, I'm so bad at
it. See? Me yeah. too. And I'm sitting next to him. I'm at a table with, like, Mel Gibson, and that's the only name I can drop because I don't know who the hell everyone else was. And I think they were cameramen. I don't know. And Andrew's next to me, and I'm like, oh, yeah, so do you have a girlfriend? Like, oh, is she an actor too? And he's like, yeah. Like, we're on a bit of a break because she's in New York and I'm in London. And I was like, oh, is she very busy? Like, just trying to make, like, human connection, you know, heart to heart. And then I go and friggin' Google him when I get back home. I'm Googling Andrew Garfield. His friggin' girlfriend he was talking about was Emma Stone. I love Emma Stone. Like, I know Emma Stone, but I was like,
yes, yeah, I know her too.
And oh, my goodness, I had dinner with Emma Stone's kind of boyfriend. I was like over the moon about that, but I don't make my own work, and I know a lot of, I've been told you need to write something, and a lot of my friends are like, you're not doing anything now, write something. Oh, you have this cool idea, write something. And I don't want to, like, if I'm being frank, I don't know what. Maybe I don't want to because I feel like I'm not competent, but I also don't feel challenged to like face that incompetence and try and challenge myself. Maybe I will later on, but at this point in my life, I don't want to, and I don't want to do something because I feel pressured to do it either.
Yeah.
Because then I'm doing it for other people, not for myself. So I don't know, like, I'm only 28. That might change in the future. It might not. And I might write something amazing, something really bad, something rubbish. Who knows? But in this season of my life, I don't have the urge to write anything of my own.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that that's really inspirational, because I'm sure that there are other people that feel that pressure and get told that, because we do get told that. I mean, it's definitely been in people's top five survival tips to create your own work. And I think, it's got a huge value to offer that advice. But also if you are sitting there going, I don't want to, or I don't know how to, or, you know, that is actually also okay.
Yeah, because also we have to know that playwriting is an art in a skill on its own, and people they study and train to be a good playwright. Some people are just born with it, good for them. Just like some people don't train to be an actor and they do great, but I'm not a writer, so I think it is unfair that sometimes people expect actors to be writers and to create their own work and to produce something. But I'm not a producer, I'm not a writer. I wouldn't mind trying to direct. A artistic director from a theatre company in Sydney actually asked me if I wanted to do their directing mentorship program. Like, maybe in the future I will do it, but I don't see myself as a playwright, and I think to assume that all actors should do writing is almost like taking away from playwrights that do it well. Like, you know, not everyone's made for everything. You don't tell a playwright that they have to act.
And I guess another way to make your own work in that sense then would be to team up with a playwright.
Yeah.
Like, if someone's writing something, you could act in their work.
Yeah,
because they
sure.
might only want to write it and not act in it, and so
yeah, and maybe know, come
you
up
can
with
collaborate.
Like, exactly, and I think like for me, I work well in improv. So if they want me to write something, like it would be cool if it was an improv situation and we're exploring a certain theme, and then I have another actor with me and we delve into that together and to see what comes out of it, and then to script it and put it on paper if it works. So that would be a cool way to write, but I never sit down with my laptop in front of me and write. I actually did. Okay. Actually, I did try once. It was an AB scene and it was horrible. So I stopped and deleted it.
Okay. Fair enough. So with the improv stuff, is that like something you've done improv classes and all that kind of thing?
No, I have never. We did improv at acting school, like as one, not like a huge subject or anything, but just as an exercise, and I enjoy it. So I think I'm good at things I enjoy, because I don't have that personality trait where I can apply myself just to succeed if I'm not enjoying it. But there have been many jobs, especially in theater, when you go into character development during rehearsals, you're always improvising because you're always playing and throwing shit at the wall and see what sticks kind of thing. So when I book a job, unless it's actually commercials, you improvise as well. Yeah, and I enjoy that part because you're not limited. When you get the chance to work with a really great director who isn't so anal about keeping on book, that's really fun, and I love that aspect of my work.
Cool. Do you have like a specific acting method that you follow?
Absolutely not. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell you one thing about anyone. I mean, you learn it. I tried reading the books in acting school, and I get through the first few chapters, and I'm like, oh yeah, that was cool, and then I just put it down. I used to do some exercises to help me learn my lines, but now, like, I'm pretty good at learning lines. Like, I can read a scene a few times, and then like it just sticks. So that's something that I've gotten good at. So I haven't had to do the I don't know, there was like an exercise where you cover every, you only circle the first letter of each line.
Oh, yes. And
learn your lines that way. I tried those exercises, but it doesn't work for me. When I was in the Players, one of the directors, she told me, memorize the thought, not the line. Because if you memorize the thought, you memorize the emotional journey of the character, and then you can kind of apply the line to that. Like, that was one way that she recommended, and that has really worked for me. So I don't know who came up with that method, but I do use that method frequently.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. What was the most challenging role you've ever played?
Soojin Park in White Pearl. I did that show for 3 seasons, because the first season it got, it did really well, sold out season at Riverside Parramatta. And then the second season, because of COVID, most of the seasons got cancelled, and then the third season we finally got to do it at Sydney Theatre Company at the Wharf One, which was amazing. But when I first did that role in 2019, it was a Korean character. I am a Korean actor. She spoke with a Korean accent. I was born in Korea, but I grew up in Cairns my whole life, and having to do a Korean accent, like I've never had to in my life. So, and we didn't learn it at acting school. We learned standard American and British and and so we had an amazing voice coach and dialect coach who really, and it was a struggle because she was a white woman teaching me, a Korean woman, how to speak in a Korean accent, and I struggled with that. But at the same time, she did her job really well and she really helped me get there. And I had this huge identity thing because why couldn't I do it? Like, it's almost like it should be second nature. But then, you know, I'm Korean Australian. I grew up here. So it was confronting for me at how challenging it was to embody that accent. I couldn't just take the accent from my mum because her accent was too strong for the character. My dad doesn't have an accent. People are like, you should look on Kim's Convenience and get the accent from there. But they do a Korean accent that is very comedic. And a lot of the actors on that show aren't Korean. So like, I felt like there was no real way, even on some K-pop stars, they have an American accent because they learn American English. So it was really hard to find someone to learn, like to base my accent from. So I kind of, like, with the help of the vocal coach, I just built my own Korean accent, and it got better and more refined as the season went on. But now, like, I'm so grateful. It was super challenging. We had a 4-week rehearsal initially, and in the second week I wanted to quit. I felt like the worst actor in the world. I felt like just not Korean at all, not Australian at all. Like, it was, yeah, it was very challenging. Yeah,
wow. So it affected both your sort of sense of identity as well as your acting.
Yeah, career. For sure. Yeah. So I'm glad I stuck it out because now that's something I can do. And I am using now because the web series I'm shooting for SBS in a few weeks, that I'm speaking in a Korean accent. So I'm just excited to be able to use something that I've learned and struggled with in the past to move forward.
Mm. Yeah, wow. Well, thank you for sharing that story because I think, that's really, sounds like it was really tough, but also ended up being really amazing. So that's a nice, an amazing journey that sometimes you have to go through those struggles to get to the kind of the next stage.
And you also, I struggled with a lot of imposter syndrome for that job because I, originally that character was cast, someone else was cast, another Korean actor. And when she booked another job, she reached out to me and said, hey, I can't do this anymore. You should reach out and get your agents to get you an audition. So that's when I auditioned and I booked it. And because I struggled so much in rehearsal, I just thought, I don't know why they hired me. Like, they obviously didn't want me, but they had to go with me because the original girl had to do another job. So it was like I had massive imposter syndrome.
Mm. Do you think that kind of having that experience has helped you with jobs since?
Yeah, I learned a lot about my culture because it's interesting. This show is about beauty standards and the power of language and racism within a Pan-Asian culture and how nuanced Asian cultures are, even though it's like under the broad umbrella of Asia, that everyone's so different. The cultures are so different within that. And I learned, before that show, I never was faced with having to, I guess, delve into my culture too much. But during rehearsals, you really discuss the nuances and you bring your own experience to the table. And that was when I was like, whoa, like, I don't actually know too much about my culture. And it was a great thing that happened, even though it was super confronting. And like, because of that job, I now know a lot more about where I came from and where Korean people came from, what our history is. I have more curiosity in asking my parents about their upbringing and their parents' upbringing. So now I feel like in my personal life more so than my acting life, and I guess it has a ripple effect on your work as well, I feel more enriched and like fulfilled in like knowing more about my identity. So.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think like getting to know yourself and being self-aware and all of those things are so important for humans in general. But then, as you say, and then an extension in terms of our work. But also, like, listening to you talk about that, it just makes me go like, ah, that's right. Like, look at how powerful theater can be, both to us as actors, as we embark on learning about the characters that we're playing, whether they're connected to us or not, but then also how much then you learning that and growing in your own identity and building a character around that can then also affect audiences.
You also are
then having that kind having that power, I guess, to then for people to watch and then come away and think about that and learn about.
Oh, I loved the Q&As were the best when we were at the Wolf One. I can't remember what nights it was. We had it once a week for the first couple of weeks, and you know, like the audiences and majority, like the sponsors. What is it? Are they called sponsors? Subscribers of SCC?
Oh, subscribers. Yeah.
Yeah, subscribers. They you know, they're older white people. And when they come to the Q&A, let's not sugarcoat it, they're older white. They come to the Q&A and a lot of them have amazing questions. Sometimes you can tell that some of them are like, how is this relevant to us? Like, why is this on? And I think if you look, there's so much nuance in the play. And if you look beyond just the racial slurs that are thrown across the stage, it's about... the power of language is a massive theme that we explore in the show. And, you know, we live in a country that is predominantly English speaking, and the power of, I guess I answered one man who asked, like, why is this relevant to us? And I said, like, you know, I know that every single person, as much as we hate to admit, we have like been in contact with a person from a different country who doesn't speak English as a first language, and they are trying to express or say something in English and we can't quite get it. Whereas like if we're working somewhere and that they're a customer or something, or if they're on the bus and they're asking you questions for directions, you know, there's like, you've been frustrated. Like, I know I'm not the only one where you have spoken to a foreign person and been frustrated. If you've never been in that situation, A, because you've just never spoken to a foreign person, get out more, and B, if you have and you haven't been frustrated, then you're an absolute angel. But I have been in situations where I have been quite frustrated because I just don't get it. And so I think anyone who has been there, that White Pearl was relevant for them. So even though it was majority white people in the audience, I'm glad it was, and I was just hoping that they could catch that. That felt like I was promoting White Pearl. It's finished, so I don't have to promote it anymore. But it was a great show, and I loved it.
Oh, it was a great show, and I think, you know, what you were talking about has relevance for the power of theatre and the importance of putting all kinds of different stories on stage, because also at the end of the day, they're human stories.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
And as you say, like, people will watch and there will be lots of ways that they could relate to it. Or at least grow in their understanding for next time they are talking to somebody from another country and trying to understand them or whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I think that's that's
all great. A learning curve, isn't it?
It is all a learning curve indeed. Yes. what does success mean to you?
So someone once explained to me, a good friend of mine, because I don't travel much. I have traveled overseas alone and done a bit of that, and like traveled interstate, and that was fun. But I don't really go on holidays, and I don't like, I've got some friends that I went to high school with who work all year and then go on that one big holiday at the end of the year, spend all the money they've saved up, and then repeat year after year, stay in their full-time job, save up, spend it. And I never had the urge to want to go on a holiday and escape and relax and do all that. So I told my friend this, and she was like, you know, I think people have the need to escape because they don't like their reality. Like, who was that lady? I wish I Googled her before this interview so I could quote her properly. But she said, something along the lines of like living a balanced life so you don't have to feel to go on a holiday and like escape. Have you heard of that quote before? I'm completely butchering it, but like if you don't have a balanced life, you often feel the need to go on a holiday and just like let like put your feet up and do all that. And for me, I think traveling is great. Don't get me wrong. Exploring, going on holidays is great. But if you feel that like you are having the need to always escape reality and get out of the situation you're in, even if you have a lot of money and you have that house and everything, that's not successful. So I guess success to me is living a balanced life, being able to meet the requirements of paying the bills, paying rent, feeding yourself well, but also having the time, because time is just as valuable as money. And if you don't have time to invest in your friends and your family and yourself, what's money going to do? So I used to hustle a lot when I first came to Sydney, and I was good at saving money, but I always felt like I needed more money, and I needed to, like, I didn't come from wealth, and so I also had no choice but to work. But I would want, I once worked three jobs at the time, because at one time, because I needed to fill my free space with making income so that one day I could be quote unquote successful. But it's, yeah, it's strange. I'm at a point in my life where I'm like, it's okay to, I'm very comfortable living off my savings. That used to scare me as well. But right now in this season, I want to see my friends. I want to focus on my physical and mental health, because during COVID that deteriorated a lot. So I feel very successful, like today, waking up, taking my dogs to the park, making breakfast, like just doing little things that I can take my time with, like being able to talk to you today. Like I feel extremely successful having the time to not have to rush a conversation with someone that like I'd never met in person. Like I think that's so special. Yeah, so success is balance.
Wow, that's a really great answer. Thank you. You mentioned going overseas then. Do you have any ambition to do the whole work overseas thing as an actor?
Oh, I wanted to move to Vancouver. Oh, actually, I wanted to move to LA, but then that was just a thought, never eventuated to anything. And then I was like, maybe I'll go to Vancouver because a lot of people, it's easier to get a visa. I spoke to some people who have been to Vancouver and they said it rains like 9-8 months of the year. I don't want to be in rain.
I thought you were going to say it rains in jobs. And then you're like, oh, like, oh no, actual rain.
No, actual rain, literal, not metaphorical. So I think that would be like really deteriorating on my mental health. And I want to take my two dogs with me. Like my partner and I spoke about, because he's a musician, and musician as in like he's a producer, produces his own work. He's very good at it, but he works at Service New South Wales. And so he is actually going through this season of like, who am I? What am I? And so, yeah, maybe he can listen to this podcast and get a nugget or two out of it. But I want to take my two dogs to Vancouver or wherever I go with me, because they're like my therapy dogs. Like I'm attached to them more than they are attached to me. So if I go to Vancouver and it's raining 8 months of the year, like can't do that. So I think my ideal would be living in Australia and working overseas. And a lot of jobs, not a lot, some auditions that I get are overseas. One time it was one for shooting in, where was it? Dubai for 6 months.
Wow.
I said no to the audition because I know that I won't cope being in Dubai for 6 months. And you have to put your mental health first. No job is worth at the expense of like your own health. And so I said no to my agents. There was a job shooting in New York for 2 weeks, so I said yes to that because that's something I can see myself doing. But yeah, I'm very picky. I'm definitely not an actor who's like yes to everything. Yeah, especially free work. It was interesting when I graduated uni, a lot of people were studying, like continued to study after 3 years of studying.
Yeah.
And one of my tutors, they were like, I told them, they're like, what's your plan? And I was like, yeah, I might like study in New York, like, or LA, go to like a different theater, film and TV school. And she's like, why? You just finished 3 years of studying. Like, why don't you just go and work now? You're qualified. And I was like, yeah, you're right. Like, why do people study so much? Like, I don't, that's just going to cost more money. And then she really flicked the switch in my head for me. And to this day, I have friends that I have trained with at acting school, and they are still studying. They will take a break and then they'll study something again. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with studying, but it's interesting observing, like, they've kind of never left the safety net of being a student, because it's easier to call yourself a student because it's like an excuse. This sounds so bad. I am not paying out anyone who is studying, because I think learning and education is a privilege and take advantage of it in this country. However, there comes a time where you got to apply what you know. Otherwise, it's just knowledge. Like, you got to apply that. I feel really lazy as well sometimes, because I sometimes reevaluate my life and look at it for what it is now, and I'm like, wow, should I be doing more? And I think, like, just recently, a few weeks ago, I've really decided to focus on relationships, because I'm an introvert as well. Like, I can be an extrovert, but I'm like 50-50, and I live by myself and I love having time for myself, but it's almost to the detriment of like my relationships with my friends. So I've really tried to focus on that because I have the time now to see them. It's exhausting, like, when I do see people, and like, oh my God, opening night, like, functions for theater, exhausting. And I hate it. This whole networking thing, I don't do it. I won't go and introduce myself to people. Like, if it comes organically, and I will, but if I don't get along with you, I'm not going to pretend to do that just to get a job.
Yeah. But also, you, like, the thing about being an introvert and having, like, knowing that social situations, like, are exhausting, like, that's so important to learn that about yourself. Because I reckon some people would just keep pushing and try and, you know, try and do it, and then feel bad if it's making them tired, or feel bad if they're not going and having the conversation. Yeah. And then my only other question that I had, and maybe this has changed through having different agents, and you said you've just changed agents, but how often do you actually audition?
I think I had like 7 auditions in 1 week, but that's only ever happened once. And this is like pre-COVID. So I don't know. That week was just like a good week. But also it was like so hectic and stressful. And I was like, I don't want this every week. Like on average, I actually write down my auditions on a whiteboard because I forget as soon as I do it. And I like to look back on the year and be like, oh, I actually did something.
Yeah, I'm trying to do that this year. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I only do that because otherwise I forget, and I'm like, I think it's good to not forget everything. I'd say at least once a week. Like, are we talking film, TV, theater, commercials, everything?
Yeah. Actor, yeah. Being an actor. Yeah.
Once a week, once every 10 days, maybe. I mean, it's sometimes I get like lately, because casting directors in Sydney know me. And it was so weird. A few months ago, I got offered a job on a show, and I didn't have to audition. And like, that was the first time I kind of felt like I made it. Like, it was so weird. This was actually not a few months ago. This was last year. But my agents called me and they're like, yeah, they have a job offer. And I was like, okay, when's the audition? And they're like, no, they're just offering you the role. And I was like, what? Like, and it was like,
this is the stuff I can only dream of.
No, but I was like, I've made it. But I didn't do it because it clashed with White Pearl, and White Pearl, it was a bigger role, so this one was only a small role, and it was actually more pay, but yeah, I did White Pearl, I didn't do it, but I was just shocked. And then it's like, casting directors for film and TV, a few of them know me very well now, and this week I got offered 2 smaller roles on a TV series. But it's interesting because my agents and I were just trying to navigate like the next step in my career, because we had a strategy meeting and they said that I'm no longer like, quote, not up, like up and coming. I'm like already established. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. That's cool. And they're like, yeah, like you've done main stage, you've done this, like you're not up and coming anymore. I was like, okay, whatever you say. And then they said, you know, I don't think you should take on these smaller roles because it's not going to really like move you forward in your career. Like it's not really strategic and that's not the next step. And I was like, oh, so that's something interesting that I'm learning from my new agents, that they are like managing that kind of what jobs I take next and giving me advice in that. So I was like, oh, this is news. So yeah. I feel like I'm
and that's pretty
learning.
Useful too, because it'd be easy, kind of like what you said about always studying, like it would be easy to go like, yes, I'm an emerging actor. It's like, when do you know, when have you emerged?
Yeah.
When what happens to get to that point?
When has one emerged?
And then do you say, I'm an emerged actor?
I'm an emerged actor. It's so funny. I don't get all that lingo. I'm like, just pay me. I just need money to pay the rent and like take some time off so I can spend time with my dogs.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I don't really mind. I actually got back to her today and I was like, you know what, put me forward for that non-speaking role, but we want to find out how much we get paid. So we'll wait for the deal memo and then see if it's like enough money for my time, because you know, I haven't been paid since White Pearl. So I'm like, a paycheck would be nice, I guess. I forgot what that felt like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. All right. So what are your top five survival tips for a career in this industry?
My first one is
get a dog.
True. Yeah, get a dog. And then second one, get two dogs. But dogs are great. That should be number one. And then number two, stay true to yourself. When it comes to roles, I get offered auditions for some like sexual like nudity roles. I don't want to do that. Like I won't do anything I'm not comfortable with my parents seeing, and so I won't do that. So I will say no, so that I'm staying true to myself instead of feeling the pressure of say yes to everything. There are other jobs out there, so I'm not missing out. Stay true to yourself. Number two, every few months reevaluate your priorities, because if you're too busy focusing on your career and forgetting about people around you that matter, I think that's a dangerous place to be in as a human. And embrace the season you're in. If you're in a quiet season, embrace that, make the most of it, because time, you might never get that time again for like 3 years if you book a big job or a big touring musical. So make the most of the season you're in. If you're super busy, work hard. If it's quiet, then take a breather. Remember, you can say no. I guess that comes back to staying true to yourself. Nothing is life or death, so you can say no to things. I'm getting my wisdom teeth out in a few weeks, and initially I was like, oh, I just signed with a new agent, maybe they don't want me to be unavailable, like freaking out. But then, you know, you come first. Oh, actually, that leads me to my next one. Nothing is more important than your health, mental and physical.
Yeah,
you're nothing without your health. I was sick for like 2 weeks. I didn't get COVID, but I got the flu really bad. And it's just the flu. It passes. Everyone gets it. Like, but yeah, you got to take care of your health, because that's very important. And that's, you're not going to survive without your health. You can't be an actor when you're dead.
That's right. Yeah. And it'd be hard to be an actor if you've got painful wisdom teeth too. Like that's a thing that you have to do.
Gross teeth. How do we get here?
Yeah. I'm missing some. I like was born with not, I think most people have four. I just randomly don't have the full set of wisdom teeth.
You're so lucky. Yeah. I'm so jealous.
Apparently it's part of evolution because we don't use them. So I'm not only emerged, but I'm evolved also.
You're emerged and evolved. The only thing that haven't emerged are your wisdom teeth.
That's right, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. It's going to cost me like $4,000 to get mine taken out.
I have had to get other teeth removed. Like, I have other dental issues. This is very boring for listeners. But but yes, I'm emerged and evolved.
These are real life things.
That's right, yeah.
Real people, we should talk about real life things.
That's right.
Oh, man.
But that is all my questions, though, so thank you officially.
You're welcome. Oh, my goodness. This is so much fun.
I hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of An Actor Survives with me, Emily McKnight. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, follow us on Instagram, and share with your friends. Your support means a lot. Thanks. The music used in this podcast is an excerpt from Saw, a marimba concerto by Robert Otomo.